Grover deserved a proper burial. I studied the landscape, and just above him sat a rock outcropping. I climbed it, and the view stretched out for miles. Given his love of heights, he'd have liked it. I kicked away the snow, went back to the plane, pulled off a piece of the tail flap, and used it like a shovel. I dug a hole, which was more pushing stuff out of the way than digging through the frozen ground. I climbed back down, lifted Grover over my shoulder, and wound back up and through the rocks. I laid him in the hole and began collecting rocks the size of softballs. I emptied his pockets and tried to take off his wedding ring, but it wouldn't budge. I unhooked his pocket watch and zipped all that loose stuff into the pocket inside my jacket. Then I unlaced his boots, putting his laces in my pocket, pulled off his wool socks, and slid his belt out of the loops in his pants. Lastly, I took his denim jacket. I stacked rocks under a cold sun that fell, turned a deep orange and then crimson. When finished, I stood up, stood back. It was a good place. The wind had picked up. I supposed it would always be breezy up here. Maybe that was good. Maybe he'd feel like he was flying. I took the wool beanie off my head. Grover, I'm sorry I got you into this mess. Guess if I hadn't hired you to fly me out here, you'd be home with your wife. I imagine you're in angel training right now. Make a good one, too. Probably on the fast track to getting your wings. Hope you get assigned to your wife. I imagine she needs you about now. If and when we get out of here, I'll go see her. I'll tell her what happened. Take your things to her. I turned my hat in my hands. I don't know if I ought to be apologizing to you. I tried to laugh. To be just gut-level honest, you did stick us out here in the middle of nowhere. The wind blew hard against my face. Unless God wants two more dead people up here, we're going to need a change in the weather. Blue skies and warmer temperatures would be nice. And since I don't know where we're going, we could use some help there, too. Maybe you could put in a word for us. The world, blanketed in white, stretched 40 miles one way and 60 in another. I think Ashley would like to wear white, walk the aisle, get married. She's young, whole life in front of her. She deserves to wear white. The light faded, giving way to a cloudless, cold sky. A gray ceiling settled in. Stars started poking through. Overhead, maybe 40,000 feet in the air, a jet airliner flew southeast, a long white tail in its wake. If that's your sense of humor, I don't think it's all that funny right now. A second plane crisscrossed the exhaust of the first. Or that. By the way, I'm lost, and since I'm lost, we're lost. Won't take much to kill us out here. We're circling the drain now. That big cat nearly did us in. You should know you were dancing with it. I guess the rub is, if I die, she dies. Not to mention your dog, whose name I can't remember. A cold wind cut through me, and I zipped up my jacket. I'm not pretending to be more important than I am, but I'm not asking for me. I'm asking for that girl in there with the broken leg and the slowly breaking spirit. She thinks she's hiding it, but she's not. She's tough. But this up here, this'll break anybody. I looked around. This is a tough place. It'll strip your hope fast. The tear broke loose and fell down my face. My hands were cut, scabbed, and cracking. I shook my head, my lip trembling. You and I, we never really finished our conversation, but I can tell you this. Living with a broken heart is living half dead, and that doesn't mean you're half alive, it means you're half dead. And that is no way to live. The mountains rose up around us, jagged, cold, unforgiving, throwing shadows. Grover lay beneath me, covered in stones and ice. Once a heart breaks, it doesn't just grow back. It's not a lizard's tail. It's more like a huge stained glass that's shattered into a million pieces, and it's not going back together. At least not the way it was. You can mush it all into one piece, but that doesn't make it a window. that makes it a pile of broken colored glass. Shattered hearts don't mend and they don't heal. They just don't work that way. Maybe I'm telling you something you already know. Maybe not. I just know when that half dies, the whole thing still hurts. So you get twice the pain and half of everything else. You can spend the rest of your life trying to put that stained glass back together, but it won't go. There's nothing to hold the pieces together. I put my hat on, only to quickly pull it off again. That's all I wanted to say. I held the compass, letting the needle spin and settle. I need to know which way to go. The two planes crossed and disappeared. Their exhaust caught my eye. I corkscrewed my head. The intersection of the two created an arrow pointing southeast, 125, maybe 130 degrees. I nodded. Given the fact that I don't have a better option, that'll do. I walked back into the cave and slipped Grover socks on her feet. They were medium-weight wool. She looked at me with suspicion. Where'd you get those? Walmart. That's good to know. I thought you were going to say they belonged to Grover, and I thought that, well, that might just gross me out. She drifted off. Somewhere near midnight, she caught me staring at the compass face. The tritium dots on the dial glowed neon green. How do you know which way to go? You don't. What if you choose the wrong direction? You, me, and Napoleon will be the only ones who ever know it. She closed her eyes, pulled the bag up over her shoulders. Take your time, and choose wisely. Thanks, that's very helpful. Don't get me started on what would be helpful at this moment. Good point. Chapter 20. It's almost morning. We're heading out in a few minutes. At least we're going to try. Don't know how far we'll get, but staying here is getting us nowhere. I packed up everything I can. I don't know how far we'll get, but I'm pretty sure every bump and jolt is going to be rough on Ashley. I hate to move her, but I can't leave her here. I don't know how long I'd be gone, and I'm pretty sure she'd be dead by the time I got back. Hope goes a long way toward keeping somebody alive, and if I'm not here, I'm afraid her hope will fade. The longer I stick with her, the longer she'll make it. Grover's resting in a good spot. He can watch the sun rise and set, which I think he'll like. I tried to say some kind words over him. He deserves better, but you of all people should know that verbal communication is not my strong suit. I told him I'd go see his wife if we get out of here. I think God should go ahead and make him an angel. He'd make a good one. He loves to fly, and he could watch over his wife. She's going to need him. I spent much of last night staring at the compass, because I know I don't need to tell you that a wrong heading could cost us. I know we're sitting in roughly 60 miles of wilderness. We might be 30 miles from the nearest town, but 30 miles as a crow flies is real different from 30 miles up and down mountains pulling a hurt woman. One is possible. The other is not. I guess if we get close and can see something, a trickle of smoke, a light bulb in the distance at night, I could take off and bring back help. But every time I think about that, I remember when you and I watched The English Patient. You kept shaking your head and pointing your finger at the TV and saying, "Don't leave her. Don't leave her. You're going to regret that." And you were right. They both paid the price. Of course, the whole adultery thing didn't help much either, but leaving the girl, that's always bad. I better get going. Sun's cracking the skyline. It'll be a long day. We'll talk tonight. I hope. Chapter 21. Ashley was grinding her teeth when I shook her. You ready? She nodded, sat up. Any coffee? I handed her a mug of fluid that looked more like weak tea. Go easy, that's the last of it. It's already a bad day and we haven't even started yet. Think of it this way. Every step away from this place is one step closer to a cappuccino at Starbucks. She licked her lips. I love it when you talk dirty to me. I sat next to her. We took care of the whole bathroom thing and got her dressed. She zipped up her jacket. I like all this personal service, but I have to say I am really looking forward to the day I can do all this by myself. I emptied the Nalgene bottle. Me too. She crossed her arms. Listen, I don't mean to overshare, but until now things have been okay as long as I've had to go number one. But that's soon to change. I shook my head. You've already done that.
I have?
Twice. Once when I set your leg and later when you were unconscious. She looked embarrassed.
That explains a lot.
Like?
Like why I haven't needed to go in like a week?
Oh, I smiled. You've gone.
Well, back to my original question.
Don't worry, just give me a heads up. We'll work it out.
Not to beat a dead horse, but I seem much more freaked out by this than you.
I was a first-year med student, midnight shift, changing bedpans, for 8 months. I was having a really difficult time, really complaining. Had a bit of a lip about it when Rachel got my attention. Told me that if I wasn't willing to do the dirty work, I'd better find another profession. That's what folks need, is a doctor who's willing to get his hands dirty and still look at them with compassion and dignity. You might say that attitude adjustment became the basis of my bedside manner. Made me consider what people need versus what I, in my ivory tower, wanted to give them. I shrugged. Rachel tore down my tower. Made me set up shop down in the trenches where it didn't smell too rosy and people were suffering. So, while this may freak you out, cause you some discomfort, may even make you blush, it's what you need. And for lack of a better option, or even a second opinion, I'm your doctor, so I'll tell you the same thing my wife told me when I tried to protest. She raised both eyebrows, waiting. Get over it. She nodded. I like this woman a lot. She narrowed her lips, sizing me up and chewing on what she was about to say. Have you won a bunch of awards, like Doctor of the Year or something? I tilted my head to one side. Or something. So, seriously, I'm in pretty good hands? You're in my hands, but the best thing you've got going for you is your sense of humor. It's worth its weight in gold.
How do you figure? It's not like telling jokes to the trees is going to hasten my escape.
See what I mean?
I cinched a strap on my pack.
One night, late, maybe early morning, I was working the ER.
Life Flight brought in a guy who'd been shot in the side of the neck. Ordinary Joe buying ice cream for his wife. She was pregnant, sent him to the store.
Wrong place, wrong time.
Got there just as a robbery went sour. When they brought him in, he was still wearing his slippers. They opened the door, rolled him off the helicopter, and he was shooting blood from his carotid. I touched her neck. Looked like something out of a squirt gun. He'd lost a lot of blood, but was still coherent, still talking. I put my finger on the hole, and we began running to the OR. We were about 2 minutes ahead of the Reaper, who was gaining on us. I got down in his face and said, "Are you allergic to anything?" He pointed to his neck and said, "Yeah, bullets." I thought, this guy will make it. Then, with all that chaos swarming around him, he grabbed my arm and said, "Doc, you operate on me like I'm alive, not like I'm dying." He let go, then jerked, and said, "And my name is Roger. What's yours?" He made it, too. Wife gave birth 2 weeks later. They paged me, called me into their room, and laid their son in my arms. Named him after me. I stared at her. Textbooks will tell you that he should be doornail dead. No reason he's still with us. I think it had something to do with a DNA-level sense of humor mixed with a rather strong desire to meet his son. I brushed her face and the edge of her smile. You've got the same thing. Don't lose your sense of humor. She grabbed my arm and pulled on me. Her tone serious. I'm going to ask you a question, and I want an honest answer.
Okay.
Promise you'll tell the truth?
Promise.
Can you get us out of here?
Honestly?
She nodded.
No idea.
She lay back. Phew, that's good to know. I thought you were going to say no idea, and then we'd really be in a pickle.
She shook her head.
And I'm not even going to ask you about the direction we're headed, because I know you've got that figured out.
Right?
Right.
Seriously?
No.
Her eyes narrowed. She tapped herself in the chest, then me.
We've got to work on our communication.
We were.
She shook her head.
I'm not asking you this stuff because I want honest answers. I want you to lie your butt off. Tell me we've only got a mile to go when there might be 100 ahead of us.
I laughed.
Okay. Listen, if you'll quit talking, we can get going. There's a helicopter waiting for us just beyond that first rise out there.
They bring Starbucks?
Yep. Orange juice, a couple of egg sandwiches, sausage, muffins, raspberry Danish, and a dozen glazed donuts.
She patted me on the back.
Now you're getting the hang of it.
Ideally, I'd have built a sled of some sort, something that would glide over the snow and not beat her to death. Problem was, that worked great on the flat parts, but from what I could see, there weren't a lot of those. And given the angles we'd be traversing, I knew I couldn't handle a sled. If I got caught off balance, if the angle was too steep, or her weight started pulling against me, it could get away from me and I'd never recover. She'd survive the plane crash only to die on the stretcher. I decided on a hybrid between a sled and a stretcher, something she could lie down in, facing away from me, that would glide behind me over those rare flat parts, but when needed, I could lift with two hands and pull behind me, giving me better control. I started with the wing that had been ripped off, given that its surface was some sort of material that was more cloth and plastic than metal. It was light, and maybe just as important, slick. Its internal structure was metal, and given that the wing had been ripped away from the fuselage, the gas tanks had drained via gravity. The problem with the wing was that it was, well, wing-shaped, rounded on both sides. So I cut a woman-sized cavity lengthwise and reinforced the bottom with the support poles from the other wing. The simplicity of it actually surprised me. My next question, would miles of dragging across rock, ice, and other rough objects tear the material?
Obviously, yes.
I had to reinforce the bottom. Reinforcing would increase drag, but without it, we'd wear through the wing in no time. Where to find a suitable piece of sheet metal?
Didn't take me long.
The engine had been shrouded by sheet metal. One side had bent severely upon impact, the other only scratched, and thanks to some mechanic who invented a way to work on the engine, it was secured with removable pins. I removed it, tied it to the bottom of the wing, about where Ashley's butt would sit, and eyed my creation.
It might work.
Given what I had to work with, it had to. I packed everything I could find into my backpack, including all the meat I'd cooked, more like jerky than filet mignon, and tied that bundle crosswise over the wing where it could elevate Ashley's leg. I fed her four Advil and held the water to her lips. She sipped quietly as I explained my idea. I don't have a good fix on which way to go, but I do know that northwest, behind us, the mountains rise up and we'd need to be part goat to get over them.
That way, I pointed,
the plateau rolls away southeast. The streams run that way too. It's pretty simple. We need to get lower, and fortunately for us, that's the only way down. So we're going to pick our way downhill. I lead, you follow. I'll have my hands on you all the time. When it's flat, I'll fix a harness that will allow me to use the straps and waist belt for my backpack to pull you. Any questions?
She shook her head and chewed slowly on the meat.
I checked her leg, wrapped her warmly, zipped up her bag, and pulled the wool beanie down over her ears. For the first time, your leg is now down below your heart. It's going to swell during the day. Best we can do is ice at night. That's going to cause you some discomfort.
She nodded.
But, I pointed, nothing is going to hurt like getting you out of here. She gritted her teeth. I put my hands beneath her arms, pulled gently, and began sliding her toward the stretcher, a few inches at a time. The sleeping bag slid rather easily over the snow and ice until it hooked on a rock or root, and when I pulled, it jerked her leg. She screamed at the top of her lungs, turned her head away from me, and threw up. Everything she had eaten, including the Advil, splattered the snow. I wiped her mouth and then her forehead, where she'd broken out in a sweat.
Sorry.
She nodded and said nothing. She was grinding her teeth.
I got her to the wing, slid her and her sleeping bag onto it, and then went back for Napoleon, who looked happy to see me. I picked him up and laid him next to her.
She put an arm around him, but didn't open her eyes. She looked clammy.
I propped her head up with Grover's bag. I secured the bow and Grover's fly rods alongside. It was ridiculously overloaded, but I was operating on the principle that it was better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it, even if it meant a little more weight. Although I did leave both our laptops, cell phones, and all paperwork related to either her or my work, figured that was all dead weight. I searched the site, double-checking, then tied a tether of cord from her to me. If everything else failed, she'd be tied to me and me to her. This was only a bad idea if I fell over a cliff and took her with me. I stared at the crash site, then up at the rocks where Grover lay, the rock where I'd had him perched, and the faint blood trail from the wounded mountain lion leading away through the rocks. Then I took a long look down into the plateau where we were headed. I took a compass reading, because I knew as we descended or got mixed up in the trees below, my perspective would not be as good. I zipped up my jacket, grabbed the makeshift handles behind me, took a step, then another, then another. After 20 feet, I said, "You okay?" After a second, she said, "Yes." The fact that her teeth were not gritted told me more than her actual answer. I didn't know if we had 10 miles to go or 100, but those first 20 feet were as important as any of them. Well, almost. Chapter 22. The first hour we said little. The snow was knee-deep most places, deeper in others. A couple of times I fell to mid-chest and had to crawl out. This was good for Ashley and bad for me. It made my walking 2 or 3 times more difficult, but made her path across quite smooth. I focused on my breathing, my grip, or rather making sure I had one, and took my time. The pain in my ribs was considerable. We walked down off our plateau, toward the stream where I'd caught the trout, and into a small forested area of evergreen trees. The limbs were thick with snow, like frosting. If you bumped one, it had dumped several shovelfuls of snow down your back. After an hour of what might have been a mile, she said, "Excuse me, Doc, but we're not going very fast. You need to giddy up." I collapsed in the snow next to her, breathing heavily, my chest rising and falling in the thin air. My legs were screaming. She looked down at me and tapped me in the forehead. "You want me to get you a Gatorade or something?" I nodded. "Yeah, that'd be great." "You know what I was thinking?" I felt the sweat trickling down the back of my neck. There's no telling. "I was thinking how great a cheeseburger would be right now." I nodded. "Maybe 2 patties. Extra cheese, of course." "Of course."
"Tomato. Gotta be a good tomato. Onion. Preferably Vidalia. Ketchup. Mustard. Mayo." White, cottony clouds drifted overhead. Another commercial airliner streaked through the sky some 30,000 feet above us. "And extra pickles," she said.
"And 2 orders of fries on the side."
"I think I could eat that whole thing twice right now." I pointed up.
"It's cruel, really. We can see them just fine, but I'm pretty sure they can't see us."
"Why don't you build a really big fire?"
"You think it'd do any good?"
"Not really, but it would make us feel better."
She looked beyond us then, through the trees in the direction I'd been walking.
"You'd better get to pulling."
She tapped the wing contraption in which she lay. "This thing's not battery-powered, you know." Funny, I figured that one out about an hour ago. I took a few steps. "I need you to do me a favor."
"Don't push your luck with me."
I handed her a clean Nalgene bottle. "We're gonna need to drink a lot."
If, while I'm pulling, you could pack this thing with snow, then slip it inside your bag and let your body warmth melt it, it'll help us both keep hydrated, and we don't need to get into the habit of eating cold snow. You mind? She shook her head and took the bottle, scooping the mouth into the snow. She screwed the lid on. Can I ask you something? The temperature was probably in the single digits, yet sweat was pouring off my forehead. I'd pulled off my jacket so I didn't soak it with sweat, and was pulling in a base layer in one shirt. My body was drenched. This was good when we were walking, but real bad when we stopped, because I had no way to get warm and dry. As long as I kept moving, I was okay, but when we stopped, I'd have to immediately start a fire and start drying out my clothes. And this was before I could do anything to help Ashley. A tricky balance. Sure, fire away. The voicemail. What's the deal? What voicemail? The one that you were listening to as we were taken off. I bit a piece of dead skin off my bottom lip. We had a disagreement.
About what?
About a difference of opinion. You're not going to tell me, are you? I shrugged. She smirked. Is she right? I nodded without looking. Yes. That's refreshing. What's that? A man who admits when his wife is right about something that matters. I wasn't always this way. While I've got you talking, I've got a question for you. Have you talked about me in your recorder? Only in a medical sense. She held out her hand. Give it to me. I smiled. No. Then you have. She raised a single eyebrow. My speaking into this box has little to nothing to do with you.
So you admit it. Some of it includes me.
As a doctor dictating a patient's diagnosis.
There's no personal opinion? No talking behind my back?
No amount of conversation would convince her. I pushed the back button, then play, rolled the volume wheel as loud as it would go, and laid it in her hand. My last recording to Rachel resonated through the air. Ashley hovered over it, listening intently. When it finished, she clasped her fingers over it and gently handed it back.
You weren't lying.
I slid it into my pocket close to my chest. She watched me a minute, the question on the tip of her tongue. I knew it was only a matter of time. Finally, she let it out.
Why do you clam up every time I bring up the recorder?
She raised an eyebrow.
What are you not telling me?
I took a deep breath that did not fill me. Silence does not qualify as an answer. Another shallow breath. Rachel and I are separated.
You're what?
We had a fight. Kind of a big one, and we're working through an issue or two. The recorder helps to do that. She looked confused.
She doesn't sound like she wants to be separated.
What do you mean?
The voicemail.
It's complicated.
We've been stuck out here for, what, 11 days now? You've set my leg, sewed up my head, even wiped my butt, and you're just now telling me you're separated from your wife?
I was acting as your doctor.
What about the other 99% of the time when you were acting as my friend?
Didn't think it was relevant.
She held out a hand. Give it here.
What?
She turned her palm up. Put it in my hand.
Are you going to hurt it, throw it, or cause it not to work in any way whatsoever?
No.
Are you going to give it back?
Yes.
Will it work when you do?
Yes.
I laid it in her hand. She studied it, then clicked record.
Rachel, this is Ashley, Ashley Knox. I'm the idiot who agreed to get in a plane with him. Your husband has many wonderful qualities, and he's a very good doctor. But he plays his cards close to his chest when it comes to talking about you. What is it with men and the whole stoic, controlled, I'm not talking about my emotions thing, huh?
She shook her head. Why can't they just tell us what they're thinking? It's not rocket science. You'd think they'd find a way to just open up their mouths and say what's on their mind. Evidently, it's not that easy. Well, I'm very much looking forward to meeting you, provided he gets me out of here. In the meantime, I'll keep working on him. I think the recorder idea is a good one. Now that I think about it, I may give one to Vince when I get home. But, she smiled at me, and I hate to be the one to break this to you, Ben may be a lost cause. He's one of the more tongue-twisted men I've ever met. She was about to click it off when she added, of course that's forgivable if a man is honest and can make a pretty mean cup of coffee. I slid the recorder back into my pocket and stood up. I'd grown stiff. Cold filtered through my wet clothes, clung to me. We had stayed too long. She looked up at me. I'm sorry I doubted you. You can delete my message if you like. I shook my head. No. I've already told her all about you, so it'll help to add a voice to the story. I retraced my steps back to the stretcher, lifted it, and began pulling. So, where does she live?
Just down the beach.
How far?
2 miles. I built her a house.
You're separated, but you built her a house?
It's not like that.
Well, what's it like?
Complicated. The kids.
Kids? You have kids?
2.
You have 2 kids, and you're just now telling me.
I shrugged.
How old?
4.
They're twins.
Names?
Michael and Hannah.
She nodded.
Good names.
Good kids.
I'll bet they keep you busy.
I don't see them much.
She frowned.
You must have really screwed up.
I didn't respond. In my experience, it's usually the guy, always thinking with your plumbing.
It's not that.
She didn't sound convinced.
Is she dating?
Nope.
Come on, out with it. Why are you separated?
I wanted out of this conversation.
Still not telling me, are you?
I didn't respond.
Her tone changed.
What if?
I knew it was coming.
Yes?
What if we don't make it out? What then?
You mean, what good is it? And given that possibility, why am I still talking into it?
Something like that.
I turned around, walked back to face Ashley. The snow was thigh deep. Blue skies were giving way to gray, heavy clouds threatening snow. I tapped my chest. I've operated on thousands of people. Many were in bad shape, much worse than us. Never once have I thought, they're not going to make it. They won't get better. By design, doctors are some of the most optimistic people on the planet. We have to be. Can you imagine a doctor who wasn't? You'd sit there and ask, Doc, do you think I'll make it? What if I shook my head and said, I don't think so? I wouldn't make it in medicine very long because no one would come to see me. We have to look at very bad situations and find ways to make them better. Every day is a chess match. Us against evil. Most days we win. Some days we don't. I swirled my hand in a large motion in front of me. And we do all of this because of one word. I tapped the recorder. Hope. It circulates in our veins. It's what fuels us. I turned away. A single tear trickled down my face. I spoke softly. I will play this for Rachel. I will play the sound of your voice. Ashley nodded, closed her eyes, and lay back. I returned to the front, grabbed the handles, and began pulling. From behind me I heard, You still haven't answered my question. I know.
Weather up here is fickle. Blink and clouds will move in, cover you up, shower you in snow or ice. You can be cold all day. But come dark, you find your face and lips are sunburnt and peeling. Your cheeks are burned from the wind, your feet are blistered.
If water is available, people can normally make it 3 weeks without food. But up here, where we're burning twice as many calories just to breathe and shiver, not to mention pull a gurney through 4 feet of powder, that time is a bit less. This land is harsh and unforgiving, beautiful and magnificent, yet unbending. Biting cold 1 second, hot the next, frigid the next. 5 minutes passed, clouds blew in, mist covered the mountain. Pretty soon the snow was blowing sideways, even circling. It stung my face and made walking nearly impossible. We wouldn't last much longer in the storm. There was no place to hide, no shelter. I stared into that white darkness and made a tough decision. I turned us around. The walk back was disheartening. I hated giving up ground we'd already gained. But better to give it up and live than keep it and die. 4 hours later, we were back at the crash. I could barely move. I got Ashley comfortable. Her face was riddled with pain. She said nothing. I forced my eyes open until she fell asleep. I woke up 4 hours later, shivering. I'd never pulled off my wet clothes. A costly mistake. The sleeping bag is designed to insulate the temperature inside it, be that cold or hot. I was cold and wet, two conditions that deteriorate the bag's insulating ability, or R-value. I stripped, hung my clothes over a wing support, stoked the fire, and crawled back into my bag, shivering. It took me nearly an hour to get warm, which meant I wasn't sleeping but rather spending energy I didn't have and couldn't spare. Not only costly, but stupid. Mistakes like that will kill you when you're not looking. Chapter 23. She did not look impressed.
So what's today's adventure?
Her voice rattled around my head. It took me a minute to remember where I was. I felt hungover, disoriented.
Huh? You gonna sleep all day? I've been trying to let you sleep because I know you're tired. But I've got to go, and it's not like I can just cross my legs.
I sat up. Sorry, you should wake me.
You were sleeping really hard, so I tried without you, but I don't have enough hands and didn't want to soak my bag.
I nodded, rubbed my eyes. Good call.
What day is this?
I raised my watch and couldn't see anything on the face. I pressed the Indiglo button. Nothing happened. I pushed it again. Harder. Still nothing. I shook it and held it up to the daylight. A deep, spider-webbing crack spread across the glass from bottom left corner to top right. Condensation had gathered beneath.
I don't know.
She noticed the watch.
That important?
Rachel gave it to me, years ago.
Sorry.
She was quiet a minute. Her voice was softer.
How many days have we been doing this?
Napoleon was licking my ear. 12, I think. She nodded, calculating.
Florence. I think we'd be in Florence now. We reserved this suite in a hotel on the Arno River overlooking the Ponte Vecchio. The brochure said you could see the lights at the Duomo in the distance. I've always wanted to see that.
When I sat up, the cold gripped my chest and reminded me I had stripped in the middle of the night. She studied the purple bruise on my ribcage.
How are you doing?
Okay. It's not as tender. She pointed to the key at the end of the wrist strap on my recorder.
You really need that out here?
You're kind of nosy, aren't you?
Well, if you're cutting weight,
she shrugged.
What's it fit?
Rachel's house.
You mean the house you built her but don't live in, where she keeps the kids and you rarely get to see them?
My. Aren't we full of ourselves today?
Just telling it like I see it.
I pulled my shirt down and began slipping into my cold, damp clothes. In doing so, I was able to see myself in the daylight. She did too.
You're skinny.
It's this crash weight loss diet I've been trying out. She chuckled, then started laughing. It was contagious, A good way to start the day. I checked her leg, helped her take care of the necessities, and started melting snow in the jet boil. I didn't know how much fuel we had left, but it had to be running low. The tank has no gauge, and it's designed to be portable, not endless in its supply. When I shook it, it did not sound promising. At sea level, it would boil water in about 75 seconds. Up here, it was taking 3 to 4 times that long. Requiring more fuel and depleting the tank 4 times faster than normal. The fuel in Grover's lighter had nearly evaporated. While Zippo lighters look cool and sound cool, reminding me of the Rat Pack, James Dean, or Bruce Willis in Die Hard, they require filling, often weekly. Again, it's a portable fuel supply, not endless. Big difference. Any matches I'd had when we started were long gone. Our options were low, and we needed fire. I'd have to keep my eyes peeled for wood that I could use to make a bow drill. It was midday. Given low clouds, an overcast sky, and dropping temperature, the snow had frozen on top. That created favorable walking conditions. Frozen snow meant that with my snowshoes I could spend more time on top of the snow rather than down in it, requiring less energy, allowing us, in theory, to travel farther. I laced up my boots, strapped on my gaiters, and slid into my jacket. One sleeve was torn around the elbow, and little down feathers were slipping out. My hands were starting to take a beating. I cut strips from the sleeves of Grover's denim jacket and wrapped them around my hands. Given that we'd packed yesterday, it didn't take us long to do it again. I loaded the sled, gave Ashley a few pieces of meat to chew on, along with some water, and pulled her to the opening, remembering the painful bump at the entrance. I slid her gently over it and out into the open air. The temperature felt 20 degrees colder. I looked at the sled, studied my process of the day before, and realized I needed a harness. Something that kept my hands free, let me pull with my legs and chest, and yet keep me connected to the sled in case of a mishap. I crawled back inside, removed the seatbelt harness from Grover's seat using Grover's Leatherman. I attached a cord from the harness to the sled and buckled myself in. It made an X across my chest, allowed me to pull my arms free, and, given the quick release buckle, let me pop out of it in a hurry if I started slipping and needed to disconnect so I didn't drag Ashley down over the side of the mountain with me. Dubious, she tilted her head. She had a mouthful of meat and was moving it from one side to the other. I pulled off my jacket, picked up Napoleon, and slid both inside the bag with her. If I wore my jacket in the harness, I'd be sweating in a matter of minutes, soaking the inside of my jacket and reducing the R value to almost nothing. This way, she kept it warm and dry, so that when we stopped, I could slip it on, keeping warm. A crucial decision. I strapped myself in, leaned into the weight, and began pulling. After an hour, we'd gone maybe 500 meters, dropping maybe 100 feet in elevation. Every 3 steps was followed by several seconds of rest, then 3 more steps, then more rest. It was painfully slow progress, but it was progress. She was not impressed. Seriously, she took a sip of water. How long do you think you can do this? The good news was that she'd been eating and drinking at a slow, easily digestible pace nearly all day. Don't know. I watched her out of the corner of my eye. We can't do this. You can't. She pointed at the skyline with a piece of jerky. Look around you. We're in the middle of BFE. BFE? Bum you know what, Egypt. I stopped, sweat dripping off my face, breathing deeply. Ashley? She didn't answer. Ashley! She crossed her arms. We can't stay up here. If we do, we'll die, and I can't leave you. If I do, you'll die. So we're walking out. Her frustration at being helpless bubbled over. She screamed. It's been 12 damn days and not a soul has come looking, and we're maybe a mile from where we started. At this rate, it'll be Christmas before we get out of here.
They don't know to look.
Okay, then. What is your plan? How do you plan to get us out of here?
This was fear talking, not logic. No amount of talking would satisfy it. One step at a time.
And how long do you think we can keep that up?
As long as it takes.
And what if you can't?
I can.
But how do you know?
What's my choice?
She closed her eyes, pulling Napoleon in close, and stared at the sky. I pulled out the compass, took a reading of 125 degrees, picked a small ridgeline in the distance as a marker, and started putting one foot in front of the other. Last night's snow had completely covered yesterday's tracks. There was no evidence we'd ever left the crash site. We didn't speak for several hours. My course took me slightly downhill and through the trees. The snow was heavy, as were the drifts. The 10 to 14 feet of snow beneath us meant we were walking through limbs that, come summertime, would be well above our heads. Evergreen limbs hold a lot of snow, although when you walk by and brush them, they don't try and keep it all to themselves. They dump as much as possible on you. I was constantly shaking out the snow from around my neck. I took my time, gauging my breathing and my energy level. I took plenty of rest between steps. If I started to get overheated, I'd slow down, take a few more breaths between steps. We were moving at a snail's pace. In a little over 6 hours, we'd come what I judged to be a little more than a mile. It was nearly dark when I stopped. I was soaking wet with sweat and exhausted, but I knew that if I didn't start making my fire bow, I'd regret it. I slid Ashley beneath the limbs of an evergreen and up alongside a rock. The ground beneath her had been protected from the snow, so it was actually dirt and dried evergreen needles. A squirrel had been here eating a pine cone. I pulled off my sweaty shirt, hung it on a limb, gathered several handfuls of dead pine needles along with some small twigs, and made a small fire next to Ashley. It lit quickly. And I was right about the jet boil. When I clicked it to start the fire, it hiccuped. We had maybe a day left in the tank. I gathered more sticks, laid them in a pile next to her, and said, "Tend this. Don't let it die. I'll be within shouting distance." "What are you doing?"
"Making a bow." She stared at Grover's bow strapped to the end of the sled.
"I thought we had one of those."
"I'm not making that kind."
I started making wide circles, looking for two pieces of wood. One piece, maybe 3 feet long with a bit of an arc, across which I could thread a shoestring or piece of cord, and then a second straight piece out of which I could cut the spindle. Something that would end up being about the size of the handle of a hammer, maybe a bit shorter. Took me about 30 minutes to find both. I slipped through the trees, the snow crunching underneath my makeshift snowshoes. Walking was a constant struggle. I stopped at a distance, catching my breath. Maybe spying is a better word. She was sitting up, tending the fire, the glow of the fire on her face. Even there, even then, she was beautiful. There was no denying that. The difficulty of our situation was always on my mind, always tugging at me. What faced us was nearing the impossible, but I hadn't really seen us through her eyes. Her sleeping bag, her sitting there with nothing to do but tend the fire and scratch Napoleon's head. She was dependent on me for everything. Eating, movement, food, water, going to the bathroom. She couldn't do a thing other than sleep. Without me. If I'd had to be as dependent on someone else for the last 12 days as she was on me, I'd have been much more difficult to live with. Doctors are used to sweeping into the midst of a problem, swooshing down like Zeus from on high, fixing it, and then getting out before the aftermath sets in. Nurses and RNAs do all the dirty work, much of the true doctoring. Ashley needed both a doctor and a doctor. Being one was easy. Being the other was not. I didn't know how to make that any better. I just knew I wanted to. I returned to the fire, slid into my bag, chewed on some meat, and made myself drink water. While the jet boil was failing, I could still use the upper piece that we cooked in, sort of a small coffee can sort of thing. At any rate, it was aluminum and would stand up to heat, so I filled it with snow and leaned it against the coals. We drank and ate for the next hour while I worked on my bow. When I'd buried Grover, I unlaced his boots and stored the laces in my pocket. They were about to come in handy. I pulled out a lace, tied a knot in one end, threaded it through the groove on one end of the bow, pulled it tight, and slid it through the groove on the other end, securing it with a few loops and a knot. Not too snug, but tight enough so that when I twisted the spindle into it, there would be enough tension on the string to spin the spindle. It's sort of a touch thing and takes a few stringings of the bow to get it right. I cut the spindle to about 10 inches, carved both ends into points, with one end wider for more friction, and then cut a groove in the middle that would help hold the shoelace in place. That finished, I set it aside, drank the last of my water, and looked up for the first time in a long time. Ashley was staring at me.
"You can be intense when you want to," she said.
"I have a feeling we're going to need that tomorrow." She crossed her arms. "I need an update. What do you think? Where are we? That sort of thing." "I think we've made it about a mile from the crash site. Tomorrow morning I'm going to climb that small rise over there and see if I can tell what's in the other plateau on the other side. We'll stay on our current heading, as much as the mountain will allow, and we've probably got enough meat for several more days. So I think we just keep going. It'll help you to stay as hydrated as you can, eat as much of the food as you like, and tell me when I jar you too much." I shrugged. "I'm sorry when I do. I know today was rough on you." She let out a deep breath. "I'm sorry I jumped at you this morning." I shook my head. "You're in a tough place. You can't do much of anything without my help. That'd be difficult for anyone." I placed more wood on the fire, slid close enough to be warm, but not set myself aflame, and closed my eyes. Sleep was falling on me fast. Then I thought of Ashley. I forced my eyes open. She was staring at me. "You need anything?" She shook her head, tried to smile. "You sure?"
"No."
She was asleep in seconds. Chapter 24. It was difficult to wake up knowing we'd been doing this for 13 days. I shook off the sleep and was dressed before daylight. The fire was out, but a few coals remained. I fed it, blew on it, and fanned a flame in minutes. I fed it again, scratched Napoleon, and then headed up the small rise above us to get a view of our surroundings. I took my time, studying every indentation, every seam in the mountain. I kept asking myself, does anything look man-made? The answer was a resounding no. Everything was pristine and untouched, a nature lover's paradise. I loved nature as much as the next guy, but this was ridiculous. I steadied the compass, let the needle settle, and took a reading. I stared across the face of the compass at the mountains in the distance. To get to them, we'd have to travel all day, maybe two, through tall trees and deep snow. Wouldn't be easy, and once in them, I'd lose all sense of bearing. Never make it without the compass. In the trees, I'd lose all sense of perspective, direction. Maybe life is like that. My bearings would take us through a gap and hopefully to a lower elevation, staring out at the immense wilderness reminding me. I could lose most everything and still have a chance, but not without the compass. I tied it to a piece of nylon cord and tethered it around my neck. When I returned, Ashley was sitting up, stirring the fire. She started on me before I had a chance to say good morning. "How'd you know you wanted to marry your wife? I mean, how'd you know?"
"Good morning."
"Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good morning yourself. Let me know when it gets good."
"I see you're feeling better."
I knelt next to her bag, unzipped the side, pulled it back, and examined her leg. The good news was there was no real change. The bad news was that there was no real change. Today at lunch, we need to ice that, okay? She nodded. Seriously, I want to know. I began stuffing my bag into its compression sack. I wanted to spend every second with her, wanted to laugh with her, cry with her, grow old with her, hold her hand, touch knees at the breakfast table. And since we'd been hanging out a couple of years, I really wanted to have sex with her, and a lot of it. She laughed. Were you two still pretty active before you separated? The best-kept secret about the whole marriage thing is that the loving part gets better. You lose, at least I did, all the I've got to prove something or whatever it is. I guess us guys get our ideas of what it ought to be through movies, when in fact it's little or nothing like that. It's more of a sharing than a taking. Movies don't do a very good job of portraying this. They show the hot, sweaty side. And that's great. I'm not knocking it. I'm just exposing the myth that that's as good as it gets. Granted, there are a lot of folks whose fires die out. I get that. But I also think there are a lot of couples out there who have been married 30, 40, 50 years that know a whole lot more about the loving part of marriage than we give them credit for. We think we're young. We've got the monopoly on passion. I shook my head. Not so sure. They might give Dr. Phil a run for his money. Grover sure would. What about when one wants to and one doesn't? I laughed. Rachel liked to call that mercy loving. And it's 99% of the time her having mercy on me. Mercy loving? It goes something like, honey, I can't sleep. Help. And before the separation, did she help you? Sometimes, not all the time. What do you do when she doesn't? Tylenol PM. I guess I'm getting pretty personal. You are. So, how's that work in the separation? I took a deep breath. It doesn't. How long have you two been separated? Long enough for me to buy my Tylenol PM in the bulk section at Costco. I began strapping stuff to the sled. Listen, I need to get you to stand up. I don't want you putting weight on that leg, so we'll take it easy. But I want you to start bearing weight on the good leg, forcing circulation. She held out her hands. I unzipped the bag. She braced her good foot on mine, and I lifted her slowly. She wobbled, got dizzy, leaned her head on my shoulder, and then finally stood up straight. That feels good. Almost feels human. How's the bad leg? Tender. More of a dull pain than sharp, as long as I don't flex the muscles around the break. I readjusted the straps on the brace. She put her arms on my shoulders, balancing on me. I steadied her by the hips. Let's just give this a few minutes. The change in your blood pressure will be good for your heart. Put it under a load and force it to move the blood around your body. She stared up into the trees, smiling. My legs are cold. Well, that's what you get for walking around in your socks and underwear. You know, when I was in middle school, this is how we danced if we were going with someone. It's been a long time since I've heard the term going with someone. If we were serious, I'd put my hands on his shoulders and he'd put his hands on my hips, slowly wrapping them around my back when the chaperones weren't watching. The crude guys wrapped their hands all around you and cupped your butt or slid them into your jeans pockets. My dad wouldn't let me date those guys. Good call. Vince hates to dance. Can't say I'm much of a fan either. Why? Got no rhythm. Okay, I've had enough. Put me down. I settled her back inside her bag and zipped her up. She pointed. Come on. Let me see. Show me what you got. What? Dance? She nodded. You've lost your mind. She swirled her finger at the ground beneath me. Go ahead. I'm waiting. You don't understand.